What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host, and I'm recording at sunset in Reykjavik, Iceland, as always. It's been a strange day with sleet showers and heavy snow and blue skies and gales, but right now everything is calm, the clouds are pink, the sun is going down, the light is coming back. It's this 7 p.m. and we still have sun. It's really, really nice. And all is well. It's been a good week too. It was Steam Next Fest last week. The community over in the Patreon Discord has been playing a lot of demos. I've been playing a lot of demos. And so the main portion of this week's episode is going to be a look at Steam Next Fest, the games that rose to the top, the games that surprised, disappointed, enthralled. So I've got a big list of Steam Next Fest demos to talk about, including some games that have come out already, some that are coming out in the next few months, and some that we can expect to see later in the year, or perhaps beyond in a few cases. So we've got a really juicy main portion of the show that will look back at Steam Next Fest. But first, as always, a little roundup section. I've been playing Resident Evil Requiem, man. Not my usual cup of tea. I'm not a horror gamer. I am somewhat squeamish and feel that my psyche is a bit porous to horrific imagery that will sink in a way that I don't quite like and haunt me when I expect it the least. So I try and steer away from horror stuff a lot of the time. But I am drawn to shiny new things, and Resident Evil Requiem is an incredibly shiny new thing. It is maybe the most AAA game that we'll see this year, barring Grand Theft Auto, I guess, later in the year. But I do think, actually, that because it isn't smaller in scope than Grand Theft Auto will be, maybe it looks better. It might well look better than that game turns out to look. Obviously, if you're making an entire huge, vast open world packed with NPCs, packed with different street corners, interiors, cars, etc., then you have to spend your resources a little more carefully. Resident Evil Requiem happens in just a few streets and one large hospital building, meaning that what environments are there can kind of be maxed out, and they really are maxed out. I've had a thrilling time with this game. It starts off in a rainy street in a kind of Chicago-like city with an L train rattling along next to you. There are bus stops, there are people walking around. It's pouring down with rain, and you can see the rain droplets exploding onto the pavement, the shimmering reflections, the neon lights of cafes and bars, complicated scaffolding, people who bump into you and then sort of look at you and say a few words. The whole thing is so detailed that it gives that moment that you sometimes get playing a very high production values video game, where you sort of stop and look at it, and you just feel a sense of wonder, like how is this digital representation of a world, our world, just so impressive and mesmerizing to look at? I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the game then moves on to a creepy hospital where a lot of the game will take place. And that too is a stunning environment. It is an old world sort of sanitarium kind of place with wards and, you know, a grand entryway with a big stair, with offices, basements, cells, operating rooms, an isolation ward, all kinds of spaces that you'll walk through. And it's old world in the sense that it also has like a social club vibe. Like there is a den with a roulette wheel. There is like a parlor with parlor games and several bars around the place as well. I'm sure that they modeled it on a real place, because some of the details that you see in this place are eye-catching. Like, there is in one area, just on the wall, a single wall detail that really got my attention. It's like a board of bells. Each bell is attached to string that is presumably in a room. And so someone pulls the room that, you know, the bell rings and a nurse will alert and go and find out what's going on. Before the age of electronics, buzzers, monitoring, cameras, all of that stuff, people would just pull their cord and ring the bell. And that is here. So that detail tells you about the age and maybe prestige of the hospital that you're in. But it is, of course, not just a hospital walking simulator. It's a horror game. And so as you walk around, you will bump into infected people, zombies. The place is in a bad way. And even the zombies, you know, we've played hundreds of zombie games. In fact, a few years ago, there was kind of a anti-zombie backlash. People were like, can you please stop making them? I think Days Gone was perhaps the last big one, because there'd just been too many after Last of Us and World War X and all of that stuff. Zombies just took over the zeitgeist, and eventually people got fatigued of them, and we saw less games. And there have been many kinds of zombie. You know, there is like the Frankenstein shambler that we're all kind of used to, that just like reaches out towards you and walks really slowly. Then we've had quick zombies that chase you. But I think some of my favorite zombie stuff is actually older. It's like in Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead, when, you know, like there are people barricaded into a shopping mall, and there is one zombie that wears a particular bracelet or something, and it keeps catching the person's eye. And they think about what kind of person that was before, perhaps, or a husband who is keeping his zombified wife alive and feeding them still in a dress that they used to wear. And so you get this sort of psychological horror aspect of zombies losing themselves. And like in The Last of Us, even, there are certain scenes where people turn and they turn from a person into a non-person before your eyes, which gives you a really startling moment. And Resident Evil Requiem joins that top tier. The zombies in this game, some of them were nurses, some of them were patients, some of them were staff, and the way that they behave represents the people they were before. It's almost like the last thoughts they had, or the thought they had the most often in their life, then sticks with them. And so they talk, they behave in certain ways. And when you come into one room, there is a patient-type zombie that is pulling around a little bag that's kind of, you know, pumping some kind of saline solution into its vein or whatever, some kind of medication. It doesn't like noise, and it's in the noise-free ward. You see signs for it when you're coming in. If you make any noise, it will start screaming. It has behavior. And so as you're sneaking around, they have behavior. In that same room, there is a nurse zombie who barely notices you because she is so obsessed with cleaning. She just keeps moaning, like, it's so dirty, it's so dirty, you made a mess. And like she just scrubs and scrubs and scrubs. In the end, I had to take out the patient zombie, and the nurse zombie charged me. But rather than coming for me, she fell to her knees and just started scrubbing the mess, the blood, the gore from killing that patient zombie, and saying, you made a mess, you made a mess. And it was like this strange, heartbreaking moment where you see echoes of the people that they once were. As well as all of that, it is also a very effective survival horror game. You're counting ammo. You can craft ammo. Any time that you find a key for a room or a lockpick for a drawer, if you get scrap that you can craft into bullets, or if you get a green plant that you can craft into a healing potion, you're like, oh my God, thank God. Thank God this was here. So it really does incentivize exploring, finding keys, backtracking, going to locked rooms that you now have the key for, opening them up and getting those resources. There are various firearms, different kinds of ammo, different crafting ingredients. And so it really keeps you on your toes. It uses the dark very effectively. Sometimes there are zombies that don't like light or can't come near you if light is on. And so you have to use light and dark strategically in your play. The whole thing has just been gripping me. Like this hospital that the game is set in is a place that is going to live on in my mind for sure. It has so much character. It's so beautifully designed. It makes you creep through it in fear until you start to attain a feeling of mastery when you have more ammo. You know what's up. You've become more powerful. You're kind of cresting that curve of feeling like the place is going to kill you at any moment. But it keeps ramping. It keeps ramping and ramping and ramping. Just very, very impressive game. I have played Resident Evil 1, the very, very first Resident Evil, when it first came out on CDs that I put into my PlayStation 1. I play as Resident Evil 2. I saw credits on both of those games. I've played Resident Evil 4 and gotten about halfway through it, first on the Switch and then the remake. And I played Resident Evil Village to close to credits, but then something else came along, I think Game of the Year season. I didn't quite get there. And I think that Requiem is the best Resident Evil game that I have played. It is the most accomplished. It is the most well-paced. It is the most cinematic, visually incredibly appealing. The resources all feel present and correct. It has references to the old games with typewriters and so forth. You can even turn on a difficulty where you need ink ribbons to save. Imagine that. There are masochists out there who will be enjoying that mode as well. I have not. I'm playing on easy mode, casual mode, as it's called. And it's working perfectly well for me. I died like once or twice. I've mostly been managing to survive, but also with that essential sense of suspense and fear that makes the game good, because even on casual mode, you have to be careful. Like, you know, you will get chomped if you are not careful. And there are moments where the game throws a lot at you too. You know, there's a moment where you come through a dining room and there's several zombies just scrambling around on the table. You can either try and take them out three at once with the few ammo bullets that you have, the few precious bullets, or you can creep past them. There are times when some zombies charge you and there is no way to deal with it. You just have to bumble through. The game knows that it's going to be scary for you. So even on an easy mode, the game is still managing to be scary. I'm just having a great time with it. I think I'm about, I don't know, halfway through the game right now, 8 or 9 hours. And I'm just looking forward to it every time I sit down. So a strong recommendation from me. I hear that the Switch 2 port is very nice. I hear that the PlayStation 5 Pro version has ray tracing and is one of the best looking console games ever made. I'm playing on base PlayStation 5 and it looks spectacular. So heavy recommend from me. That's Resident Evil Requiem. I may well come back and review it fully when I've completed it. Or at the very least, just talk through the second half. I did also make a March indie releases video over on YouTube. I'm not going to retread the whole thing here, but I am going to give you a couple of highlights. The full YouTube video contains tips on 15 different games that are coming out this month. It took me about a day to make that video. There are footage of all of the games that you can watch. I will put a link in the show notes if you would like to check it out. But each month, I also pick a couple of most hype games. Those are the ones that I'm most looking forward to, the ones that I suggest people check out or that I am most excited for. I had two most hype games of the month. On the third of the month, Esoteric Ebb came out. It's a Disco Elysium-style CRPG in a fantasy setting. I've been playing it. I've been loving it. And I'm going to be talking about it later in the episode because it was in Next Fest, so I'm not going to talk about it too much here. But one of my most hyped games of the month was Esoteric Ebb, and I really recommend that you check it out, especially if you like Disco Elysium. My other one is also going to be featured later in the video. It's Racoin, a coin-pushing roguelike, which is going to be published by Playstack, publishers of Balatro. And it's a Balatro-style game with coin-pushing instead of poker. That was a big hit for me as well. So those two are my sort of official most hyped games, but there are some other ones in here that I think are interesting. Planet of Lana 2 is coming out on the 5th, or today, as I'm recording this. I know a lot of people are interested in that. Slay the Spire 2 is going into early access today. May already be available on Steam, so if anyone is the kind of person that loves diving into early access, playing first, offering feedback to the developers, Slay the Spire 2 will be available today. Replaced was going to come out on the 12th of the month. It has been kicked back into April. And that's a bit of a funny one because, you know, the game's been in development for 5 years. They made a big song and dance about this March 12th day and they've kicked it back a month, just, you know, a week before release. So that's kind of a crazy one. No Replaced this month. One of the games that I wanted to shout out is Bonnie Bear Saves Frog Time. That's coming out on the 16th on Switch and PC. If you have a photographic memory, or I don't know what they call it, if you're listening to something, not photographic, an audio graphic memory, you may remember me talking about this game before in a previous Next Fest. It is a colorful adventure where you are a bear that walks around in sort of paper crafty world, colorful cartoon world, and you engage in a game called Frog Time, where you will play this game of frogs, where you bring all your frogs out of your pocket, and it's like strategic noughts and crosses frog racing. So it's an adventure game where you walk around and talk to people. There is a plot, there is a bad guy, And then during the game, you will play bouts of Frog Time. I absolutely love the demo. I've been waiting for this one for, it feels like over a year. I think it was like this time last year, Bonnie Bear Saves Frog Time was in Next Fest. It's coming out this month. So put it on your radar. I think that's going to be a good one this month as well. I would also say that as well as that video, which runs down those games and 10 more, I also made a written version of it for So Many Games. A friend of the show and patron of the show and supporter of the show, Jason, aka Gamer Jason on a lot of social media, runs this great site called somanygames.co.uk. And I really recommend it. Lots of patrons of the show have started writing for So Many Games. I think Jason does a really good job of curating writers, curating the games that are covered, and keeping the site fresh, clean, appealing. And like the antidote to the crappy internet that we all have to live with these days, with pop-ups, pop-overs, videos, join our newsletter, cookie windows, like So Many Games has none of that stuff. It's just a clean, easy webpage, no ads, no nonsense, that you can check out, read good reviews from good people. And so I wanted to contribute to it, and so I have been with these indie look-ahead articles. I will put a link in the show notes for that as well. So go and check out the YouTube video if you'd like to see the games in motion. Go check out So Many Games if you'd like to read about the 15 games that I've selected. And yeah, that's it. That's the March Indie Look-Ahead coverage. One more piece of housekeeping. I saw this this week that the London Games Festival has revealed its show floor lineup. I'm planning to go over for that, man. I think I'm going to go and check out the London Games Festival. I believe that the Lost in Cult guys are going to be there selling books, including my Ultros book. There's going to be loads of games on the show floor, loads of events around the festival. I'm going to do a little bit of preview coverage, including one of the people that runs the event, Michael French, who is going to pop on the podcast as a guest. So it's fun to see the London Games Festival warming up. You know, I always get a lot of FOMO when half the world seems to be at GDC in San Francisco, or I can't remember, LA, I think, actually. Or, you know, PAX East, PAX West, all of those different US game events. I feel left out. I'm interested in going to them, but I've never quite made it. And so London Games Festival, which is just a two-hour flight from me, is the closest to me. And so I look forward to going and getting a flavor of games culture, you know, outside of the solitary environment of playing and podcasting. So if any of you over there in London, any of my listeners are heading to London Games Festival and you see me on the show floor, then do say hello. I'll be there. And London Games Festival looks good, man. It's a very interesting roster. I'd only heard of two or three games on there, and I think that's the best way to have it. You know, there will be loads of indie games there that have gone through a rigorous sorting process to get to the show floor and being handpicked. And of course, there's usually, you know, Devolver usually sweep in at the last minute, or people usually sweep in at the last minute with some big games too. So I'm really looking forward to going over there. I'm really looking forward to talking to Michael French, and shout out to London Games Festival for, you know, being near me, I suppose. And so just before we get to this Patron Next Fest segment, I do want to say that all of the patrons over in Discord are members of my Patreon. You can join too. It starts at $1. So if you like the sound of this like Next Fest communal event where everyone's playing and voting and talking and sharing, and the vibes of that, people do really enjoy it, man. I really enjoy it. It's a great way to play demos together and to have it feel like a community event. When you come back into the Discord, you tell people about what you've been playing, you can see what they are saying, and it makes a sense of community. It's a lovely way to play and share demos together. Anyone can join the Patreon. $1 a month is not much. It's less than the price of a coffee. So you can join at that $1 tier and join the Discord. We are quite close to 200 patrons. So if you've been listening to the show for a while and thinking about the Patreon now and then, it is a great time to jump in. There are various tiers. If you join at the $3 tier, you will get ad-free podcasts. So if you get ads in your podcast and you don't particularly like them, $3 tier and above, you can get a Patreon link, an RSS, put it into your player, whatever that might be, and have ad-free versions of this podcast delivered to your player, sometimes a day or two early as well. You will get exclusive podcasts, about 10 a year. You know, I'm going to try and do one a month this year. I'm going to do one soon about the Reykjavik Food Festival that I just went to. There are visiting chefs from all around the world in Reykjavik for 1 week of the year at the Food and Fun Festival. I went out and ate at three different restaurants, a Mexican chef, a Basque chef, and a chef visiting from a seaside restaurant in Tenerife serving Japanese-Spanish fusion cuisine. So I'm going to do a little episode talking about the Food and Fun Festival, my experience of it, about sort of culinary culture out here in Reykjavik, the restaurant experience, the dishes that we tried, the different rooms that we were in. I also post bonus episodes about travel, like when I went to Dublin or Tokyo or London Games Festival last year. There were exclusive episodes where I talk about the experiences and the places that I've been visiting. There are episodes about books. There are episodes about music, like radio shows, where I play the music that I'm enjoying. So $3 tier on Patreon Plus to get all of those episodes that you can listen to anytime you want. And there is a $10 tier too for boss tier patrons, who get a shout out on every single podcast and video. So big shout out to my boss tier patrons, Shy Guy, King Champ, Susanna Maria, Nate, Drellish, Reistic Studies, Essie Woods, and a brand new boss tier patron, Noah. I had a really nice conversation on Patreon with Noah when I was sending him his welcome message. He told me that a friend of his plays the Gaming in the Wild podcast to their kids because they like to fall asleep to it, which is like the cutest thing I've ever heard. So thanks to Noah for the good vibes and for the patronage. That's patreon.com/gamingin the wild if you'd like to hop aboard. And with that, let's get into the main body of the episode and talk about Steam Next Fest, February 2026. So I'm going to start off this Next Fest roundup with my own take, some demo impressions of the stuff that I played. It's a pretty mixed bag this year, to be honest. There were some games that I loved, there were some that disappointed me, there were some that wouldn't work at all. But you know, that's Next Fest, that's par for the course. But there were definitely some keepers mixed in here with all the other stuff as well. And I do think it's kind of important to try and be kind to demos, especially in Next Fest, because the game's literally still in development. Demos are a way to get them out to people. Sure, it's a bit of promotion, but it's also a great way to get feedback, see what works, what doesn't. Some demos seem to have come out a little bit too early, perhaps not quite ready to be seen in the wild out of that development environment and played by people that aren't, you know, steeped in the game. Other demos come out incredibly polished and look like the game is just ready to go tomorrow. Some games just haven't had that final layer of polish. And so, you know, sometimes you experience bugs, sometimes you experience crashes, etc., or little things that don't work. But I think it's all part of the Next Fest experience. So I'm going to try and be kind to things, even if I'm giving them a not-so-great roundup here. I think it's also worth saying that I play PC games largely on an ROG Ally X handheld, which means that controller support is very important to me. It's one of the more powerful PC handhelds on the market. You know, it was released just a couple years ago. It's got loads of RAM, loads of power. It can run Cyberpunk 2077. It can run, you know, all kinds of games. But some stuff is just not ready to be played on a handheld, whether that's a lack of controller support or a lack of optimization. That means it will bug, frame drop, jerk around, have all kinds of problems. So, you know, in the age of the Steam Deck and the Ally and all of those other PC handhelds that are slowly creeping up the charts in terms of the amount of people on Steam that are playing with them, I think it's like 15% of people on Steam at the moment use a controller first and foremost, many of which are handheld users. That does also mean that like 85% of people on Steam are using a mouse and keyboard and a computer and a PC. So I think for indie developers, perhaps accommodating to that other 15% that I just happen to be in is a step too far at demo time. But I do think that in the age of the Steam Deck, a demo that's going into Next Fest should really be playable on a handheld. That's just my take, you know, if it wants to give a good first impression. There's nothing worse than being enticed by a game, enticed by the key art and description, downloading it, starting it up, and then realizing that the menu just doesn't work for you and having to just either deinstall it or dock your handheld into a dock, get it on the monitor, get the mouse going, get the keyboard going, connect everything. So I did a little bit of that, actually, because there were some games that were keyboard and mouse only that I wanted to play. But some games are definitely intended for controller, but aren't yet optimized. So, you know, a lot of pre-chat there. But yeah, one of the games that had that problem actually was the first one I'm going to talk about. It's called Akatori. It's a very promising action platform, Metroidvania type game. Really cool pixel graphics. I was enjoying the game a lot. It's got a very mobile moveset with air juggling and with very satisfying impacts when you're hitting stuff. And I was having a really good time with it. It's got quite a fluid feel. But it came to a point where some of the tutorial stuff was kind of messed up. Some of the button prompts were wrong. And some essential moves just didn't seem to be mapped to any button. So I got locked in the demo and couldn't progress because some of the commands didn't work. So sadly, I couldn't play through very much of that one, despite liking the vibe. And I will keep an eye on Akatori just to see if that is rectified in future demos. It's definitely one to have an eye on if you like action platformer, Metroidvania-style stuff. I also had a couple of problems with Besmirch, a game that I've talked about in videos before. It's a horror farming game. You know, one of the good things about NexFest is playing stuff you never played before, right? And a game that mixes farming by day and then zombie defense by night with a very crunchy pixel aesthetic was something that I definitely wanted to try. You arrive in the town of Besmirch to start your new farming job. You're fresh off the train, and immediately people start saying to you, like, "You sure you want to be here? Here's the shack you're going to be sleeping in, and don't come out at night." You find out that at night the town is overrun with monsters. I tried to play this game in a few different configurations. The controller was sort of semi-working, so I switched over to keys and mouse and found that that was also semi-working. So something wasn't quite optimized or working with my setup. Nothing quite clicked there. I really like the look of this game. I think it could be really interesting. I'm quite drawn to this idea of dual game styles smashed together that worked so well with stuff like Moonlighter, like dungeon crawling and shopkeeping. This one is horror game and farming. I'm really into the look of it, even if my NextFest demo experience wasn't so great. That's Besmirch. A game that was optimized for controller, but had another kind of technical issue, was 1348 Ex Voto. This one is a promising looking game indeed. It's perhaps the most visually ambitious game that I played during this NextFest. It has the feel of...
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
A double-A game about it. It's got like a Plague Tale vibe where you're walking through some pretty sweeping, detailed environments, some of which are linear, like a Plague Tale when you're coming through the village, if you played that game, the Plague Village at the start of the game. The demo had the feeling of that about it. You play it as a knight errant. That is like a wandering knight in 1930s, 1300s Italy, rather. 1300s Italy. In 1930s, I don't think they were wearing armor and using swords. I think they might even have had scooters and martini by that point. But it's a martial arts-inspired sword combat game, third person. So as you're running through the alleyways, you can draw your sword. You can use multiple stances. There is a single-handed stance, a double-handed stance. There are blocks, parries, so forth. So it's supposed to be like a realistic sort of fencing game. I don't know how realistic it is, honestly. It feels like an action-adventure game where you're kind of a little bit mashing. But you do have to learn to... Maybe it's just a forgiving demo, you know. You do have to learn to block. You do have to learn when those attacks are coming in. Maybe the game was just giving me a break as a new player. Graphically ambitious, as I said. I would play more of this one for sure. Great voice acting too. Jennifer English is in it. So there's some really high quality voice acting going on. I'm very curious about this. I have requested a code for review, but I requested it on the PlayStation 5 after it made my poor old ROG Ally X sound like it was going to take off. It was dropping a lot of frames, even on the, you know, high power mode. So I think I'm going to try that one on PS5. It's coming out later this month. That was 1348 Ex Voto. I also played a little bit of Airframe Ultra, a kind of a crunchy vehicle combat game. Third person again. When you're on foot in this game, it feels kind of weird. You have to kind of mash a button to run. Otherwise, your character is very slow. You can dual wield shields and weapons. So you can run around and fight on foot. But most of the game is spent on your airframe, which is like a hover bike type thing with an armor carapace at the front. It's supposed to be a multiplayer game. I didn't play it multiplayer. I just played the tutorial and drove around these kind of Half-Life style giant industrial environments and had a fairly good time. I should have gone and played multiplayer really, because that's what the game is actually all about. But I just enjoyed the environments, decided that multiplayer was not, you know, on the menu for me at 3 a.m. when I was playing a bunch of demos. It wasn't quite the vibe I was going for, so I called it a day. But I will say that some folks in the Discord dived into the Airframe Ultra multiplayer and really enjoyed it, so I'm flagging it here as well. There were also a lot of Balatro-likes. You know, I think we're about to enter a golden age of Balatro-likes, or a cursed age of Balatro-likes, depending on how you feel about Balatro-likes. The first one I tried was cursed indeed. In the best possible way, it was Cursed Words, a spelling game, sort of Scrabble-like, but not. You can power up your tiles in this game between rounds to make builds to beat blinds. There are bosses in the game that you have to play against that will curse some of your letters, as per the title. I actually won my first ever run on this game, which took the wind out of my sails just a touch, I have to say. It's nice to win, but it's not nice to just coast through an entire run of a roguelike on your very first game. Maybe I just stumbled onto a winning build. It seemed pretty obvious, though. I multiplied the score I was getting from blue tiles and then maximized the amount of blue tiles. I got an additional multiplier if I was not using red tiles, and then maximized the red tiles as well. So I was sailing quite close to the wind. Felt nice, but also like I'd played enough, which is interesting information, right? I mean, I guess that's for the developers to harvest that kind of information from people, but it being a little bit easy in an off-putting way, despite being a really tempting game, was the fate of Cursed Words for me at this next fest. I also played Gambonanza, which was more of a challenge. It's the second chess-like Balatro-like after last year's Passant, which I quite enjoyed. It was at London Games Festival last year. This one's a bit better, I think. It's a bit more polished. It's a bit more successful. You start off with a very small chessboard. It's you versus the enemy, and you roll the dice to get your pieces. So you might get like a pawn, a bishop, and a pawn. If you get a pawn to the other side of this tiny board, you can make a queen, and you'll just mop up immediately. But you do have to play by the rules of chess. It's like close combat chess at the start. But between rounds, you can buy more players. The board gets bigger. You can get charms that will do things like, you know, if a pawn is taken, then you immediately get to power up another pawn, so you can turn it into a queen, things like that. So you start making builds. Very tricky, though. I mean, after a while, tiles sort of the board start falling away, which I guess is like a way of tie-breaking a round that is going nowhere. And I will say that I did have one round where I had two white bishops and the computer had two black bishops, and so there was no way for either of us to take any of the other pieces, and the board just fell away, and it was like game over, and it felt pretty crappy. So maybe there were a few loose bits inside of Gambonanza, but that was the only run where that happened. It doesn't handle stalemates well, is what I'm saying. But maybe you have to start legislating for that in your builds, you know. I did also have quite a lot of fun getting through the levels, powering up, learning the ropes. So Gambonanza is one to watch for sure. But the winner of the Balatro-like cup that I've just invented for this next fest was Racoin, a coin-pushing roguelike. I used to love coin-pushing machines when I was a kid. You know, if you go to the seaside, you get a bunch of 2p's, you pump them into this machine, and you try and push more 2p's off the shelf. Really, really fun, really, really addictive, like a childhood seaside game. Racoin is a roguelike based on that. The reason it's Racoin is that you are a raccoon, but it's a first person, so you're looking straight into the coin-pushing machine. And it's not just coin-pushing. Like, you can make all sorts of broken builds in this one. It seems like an eminently breakable Balatro-like in a way that I really like. You can get magnetic coins, sticky coins. You can get a black hole that hoovers up coins. You can make a giant tower of coins that's too big to push, and then get like a boon that lets you shake the machine and have them all fall down. The blinds come fast and furious. I've played 4.5 hours of this demo when a lot of games that I played in NextFest got under half an hour. So I think that speaks to how good it is. I came back to it night after night after night, and I'm dying for the actual full thing to come out because the demo has a limited selection of boons, buffs, etc. And I really want to see what the full scope of this one is like. One of my games of the festival for sure. So Racoin was the most promising Balatro of NextFest, I think. It's actually being published by Playstack, who are the Balatro publishers. So yeah, some direct connection there as well. I did also try the much-hyped cyberpunk platformer Replaced. It's an aesthetic masterclass, great lighting, great mixture of like a 3D and voxel pixel sort of style. So it has computer game crunchiness, but with modern-day lighting and vibes, just dripping with the cyberpunk atmosphere. It references Inside pretty openly in the opening section of the game, with stealth sequences where you're avoiding spotlights, darting from car to car. It also has melee combat with parrying, dodging, a gun that you can use, and waves of enemies that just keep coming. But overall, I liked the look of it, but I didn't like the feel of it. It's one of those games that is very heavily animated. In fact, the game promotional material trumpets how much animation there is in the game, and it is beautiful to look at. But it is so animated that if you do something on the controller, it takes a second to see it on the screen. So it feels like you're playing through syrup, which is one of my gaming turnoffs, one of my gaming pet hates. So despite the fact that Replaced looks very, very promising, I mean, I feel the same way about Planet of Lana. Planet of Lana 2 was also in Next Fest. Both of those games have this over-animated, sludgy feeling, like Flashback or Prince of Persia, that some people feel okay with. They just learn to time their button presses. But to me, it's just a constant thorn in my side and a really dissatisfying experience, unsatisfying experience. So Replace goes into that bucket for me, despite it being a really popular demo. I think it hit the top 10 most played Next Fest games. Just to whip through a few more, I also gave The Eternal Life of Goldman a spin. It's one of the nicest looking 2D platformers I've ever seen. It has incredibly detailed line-drawn backdrops and a really, really colourful, detailed world that you can really sink into. Honestly, I have seen fewer more striking visual games in this style, at least. So it really has a lot going for it. But it has these story sections, so you do a little bit of platforming, and then you flash away from that to these really, really long sections where you can hear the voice of a kid talking to his mom, a sick child and a worried mother talking about Goldman. And it just pauses the game. It kills the momentum of the game. And not to be uncaring, but I really couldn't care for the story. It's like this parallel world story. It's like if The Princess Bride, the movie, was like 50% the kid rather than like 5% the kid, or like The Neverending Story. You know, The Neverending Story is about a fantasy world. You occasionally flash out to the child for like 5 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. But in this game, it's like too much kid. It really broke the momentum of the game for me. So despite this being a very impressive, fun, visually stunning platformer, I think there's been a bit of a catastrophic game design decision here where they're force-feeding you story that you may or may not gel with and snapping you out of the fun of the game. So that demo was a real fail for me. I also played a bit of Vampire Crawlers, the Vampire Survivors sequel that is a first-person Dungeon Master-style deck builder, where you can move around on a grid, turn left, turn right, step forward, step back, etc. Occasionally there'll be monsters. You use cards to fight them. Good game. I played it for a while. It didn't do anything that blew my mind. I'm not sure it's quite got the juice that Vampire Survivors had, but, you know, all present and correct. It wasn't drawing me back. I felt like if I was going to play more of Vampire Crawlers, it would be me pushing the game to say, like, what's in here? Like, shaking the game, looking for the magic ingredient. I played half an hour of it and I could not find that magic ingredient. It was fun, diverting, but not compelling or compulsive. So interested to see where things come down on Vampire Crawlers. Just looking down the list here, I've got 6 more games to chat about quickly before we get to the charts and the community votes. There was also Esoteric Ebb, a fantasy CRPG with a nice sort of isometric viewpoint, colourful, crisp graphics, dice checks, a skill tree, meaningful dialogue choices, a lot of chatting, a lot of running around. And you have an absolutely weird amnesiac protagonist in this one, just like in Disco Elysium. And the game is just brilliant. It was obvious from the opening moments of this game that it's doing everything right. The presentation is flawless. It's slick, polished, intelligent, compelling. And as a knight cleric investigating a tea shop explosion during this realm's first ever election, as a political consciousness nested inside of it as well. You travel the town, you question the witnesses and all of the politicking stakeholders, and you decide how to resolve difficult situations or fail to resolve them, because there are some quite comedic fails you can have in this, just like Disco Elysium. It is actually perhaps the game I've played in this post-Disco Elysium world that comes closest to summoning up that same magic and sense of chaos. For example, you can get stuck on the arm of a working windmill and have to work your confidence to see if you can jump off it again or die. You can suffer a fatal lack of morale flirting with an orc lady that just kills you on the spot. It has that same irreverence as Disco Elysium and that sense of mischief, possibility, and bad outcomes sometimes also being good or interesting. Much more so, ironically, than Zero Parades, which is the actual Disco Elysium follow-up by what's left of Zaum Studio, after all of the controversy that they've been through. I didn't really like what I played of Zero Parades, actually. It looks a lot like Disco Elysium. Like, it's the same visual style, which is ironic given that they fired the art director of Disco Elysium. The writing is Disco Elysium style, but not quite there. They also fired the two lead writers of Disco Elysium. So they're trying to continue the legacy of people who invented the style, having fired them, which makes it feel off. You know, I think Disco Elysium was brazenly confident and self-assured. It had a sort of swagger to it and a sense of playfulness, a sense of looseness. Zero Parades felt in the writing a little terse, a little eager to impress from moment to moment. I think Disco Elysium was just clever writing, whereas Zero Parades feel like it's trying to talk you into it being clever. It's trying to prove its cleverness rather than just being clever, if that makes any sense at all. So I will freely admit that the Zaum situation makes me feel a bit queasy about a disco-style game coming from that studio when it's been so brutal to the people that invented the world of disco. The key creatives were fired. So that really coloured my impression of this game. I went into it feeling a bit queasy, which does not help. So to me, Zero Parades is currently feeling more like an imitation than a spiritual successor, which is interesting given that Esoteric Ebb, a completely different team, actually did seem to summon up more of the spirit of Disco Elysium. I also played All Will Rise, which I talked about after the London Games Festival last year. That's the courtroom deck builder where you investigate environmental abuses and catastrophes, and then bring a case to court in a legal deck battler. Very, very cool game. I'm very excited for the full release of that. I played a bit of Altered Alma, a cool cyberpunk pixel Metroidvania that played pretty well but had an incredibly wonky script. It's actually by a Spanish porting house making a game for themselves. So I do wonder if the script has been lost in translation or badly localized, because some of it was just abjectly poor, like the Caravan Sandwich script, the game that hit my Games of the Year list, but whilst fighting against itself, because it was sometimes kind of nonsensical or mangled, or like a series of non sequiturs. So Altered Alma, fun game, fun combat, fun cyberpunk environments, terrible script. So maybe that can be fixed up before it comes out, because the rest was pretty good. I also played half an hour of Titanium Court, a really fresh and interesting pixel art game that mixes a narrative about a mysterious moving castle that is the Titanium Court with a strange match three game. So you go inside of the castle, you can talk to these people that are like tiny little bunches of pixels. You'll sometimes see portraits of them pop up on screen, and then you'll have to play like a match three game where the Titanium Court is one square, and around it there are forest tiles, sea tiles, mountain tiles, enemy castle tiles, and you have to match them to strategically chase off the enemy castles. There are also other mini games in there too. I only played like less than half an hour of this one, but it left an impression. It had a really vivid pink and purple pixel art color scheme. It had some chutzpah in the writing for sure. It had some spirit. So Titanium Court was definitely one to watch. Two more to go. I also tried Ether and Iron. Dovetail, podcast patron and friend of the show, and sometime guest on the show, was a big fan of this one. It's an engaging point-and-click adventure set in a flying steampunk city with film noir vibes, lots of trench coats and flashlights and, you know, trilbies or Panama hats or whatever, you know, Humphrey Bogart wears. It had a really nice Art Deco style to it, and great voice acting with a lot of "here's looking at you, kid" energy. Also some car combat, a little tactical minigame that you could play as well. I played half an hour of it, enjoyed it. Dovetail has played more and is obsessed with it. So Ether and Iron is one to watch as well. And then finally, there was Alabaster Dawn. This is the follow-up to Crosscode, of which I've played just a little, top-down pixel Zelda-like game. It's entering early access soon with a 2027 release date, so it's quite a way off. But this game brought a huge smile to my face, much more than I was expecting. I think most top-down pixel adventure games in the Zelda style are pretty slow, you know, like Secret of Mana, Zelda, etc. You kind of trot around the landscape slowly, chopping bushes, etc. This one's rapid, man. Like, you fly through the game. You can run, you can coast, you can jump and double jump, you can climb the scenery. Occasionally you get a combat gauntlet, like a blood-gated room. It's a mixture of ranged with lock-on and melee combat moves that you can power up. You quickly bash through puzzles. Really, really exciting game. The thing that I liked most about it maybe was the scenario. It was a sort of fantasy Fallout type thing where you walk out of a sort of stone chamber where you've been sleeping to find that the world you knew is decimated. You are one of the chosen ones and you have to figure out what's going on in this world. So a really nice premise there too. Just brilliant. A lovely surprise, a real breath of fresh air, Alabaster Dawn. The demo is still up. The demo for a lot of these games, actually, are still up. So if you like the sound of anything that you've heard about, then go and check them out. The demo might still be there. But now to get to the big business, right? So my personal top five of the games that I've just talked about, if I were to run down the ones that I would definitely suggest you check out, that I myself will be playing when they drop, number five, Titanium Court. I really like the art style. Very, very interesting, intriguing game. Like, I didn't really get a full sense of its identity. And that is actually appealing if you're playing a lot of demos. Like, the want to know more. Titanium Court definitely piqued my interest. Number four, Gambonanza, that chess Balatro-like. I could have played that all day, honestly. It's one of those games you have to drag yourself away from it because you have more demos to play. Number three, Racoin, the coin-pushing roguelike. That's just going to eat a lot of my time this year. I already know it. It's coming out in the not-too-distant future, I think on the 31st of the month. So you can expect to hear me talking about Racoin again. Number two, Alabaster Dawn, that cross-code follow-up that I just talked about. And number one, Esoteric Ebb, the CRPG that really just came out of nowhere, that surprised the heck out of me. It shouldn't have, because it's being published by Raw Fury, who have a very good record. And I have got a code for that one. I'm playing it now. It is out now on Steam, so you can go and play Esoteric Ebb right now if you'd like to. Heavy recommend from me, and you will definitely hear me talking about it again in a future episode. And that leads us to the community vote. So we had an event on the Patreon Discord, as I said, where anyone could play as few or as many demos as they would like. They rank them using our patented four-point review scale that goes bad, okay, good, or yes. And yes is the top mark. That's for a game that people are really excited about, thought was doing something interesting, a game that they definitely intend to play, and the demo really sold them on it. I want to say a huge thank you to Slater, patron Slater, who administered this whole NextFest event using the spreadsheet, and to patron Soccer for their spreadsheet wizardry, who helped to calculate the totals, keep everything running. And when we got double the amount of people that did it last time, it really helped to enlarge the spreadsheet to accommodate everyone. Because sometimes we've had, you know, 6, 10, 12 people taking part. This time we had over 30. Together, they played over 150 demos. So we had a really nice big sample size. And in 10th place was Cursed Words. It was that Scrabble-like, Balatro-like that I talked about a little bit. That got 4 yes votes and 5 good votes. Number 9 was Vampire Crawlers. 5 yes and 6 good. So, you know, it's working for people. People are enjoying the Vampire Survivors follow-up. Good to see. Number 8 was Titanium Court. 5 yes votes as well for that one. It's a whimsical narrative strategy game that's intriguing for sure. Number 7 was Alabaster Dawn with 5 yes votes as well, that cross-code sequel. Number 6 was Croak, a game that I did not play actually, which got 6 yes votes and 4 good votes. It's a fast-paced 2D platformer with a hand-drawn style. So imagine if like a Disney illustrator had made the art for Pizza Tower, and then you're in the right kind of ballpark. I'm going to see if that Croak demo is still up and try it. Number 5 was Phenopolis, a demo that I downloaded but did not get to. A very stylish papercraft point-and-click with an avant-garde art influence and a sort of political spirit to it as well. Phenopolis, really interesting-looking game. 6 yes votes for that one, 4 good. Number 4 was The Eternal Life of Goldman, that platformer that I had just critiqued for its narrative method. That got 8 yes votes and 6 good, so the community was feeling The Eternal Life of Goldman. I'll be very interested in the meta score for that one. I'm going to say it's like an 81, and people are surprised that it's not a 90. You can quote me on that later. Number 3 was Replaced, the pixel art cyberpunk game, or rather pixel voxel crossover with the dark cyberpunk setting. 9 yes votes for that, 2 good, and 3 just okay. I was one of the just okay people. Number 2, Esoteric Ebb. 9 yes votes for that, so the community agrees with me. But number 1 was Dench Attack. Kind of surprising to me. It was a game that you may have seen if you watched the Game Awards pre-show, or rather the Gamescom pre-show last year. It got 11 yes votes, so it really did win this one handily, and 8 good votes as well. It's the train skating game, on rails train skating game, where you stunt and jump from rail to rail, avoid obstacles, do Street Fighter style joystick moves to try and do tricks as well and bump your score up. So Densha Tak won the community vote. It was a very fast and furious game, maybe a little bit too fast for me, but that one's coming out on June 17th. So, you know, when the summer is in full flow, it's time for Densha Tak. And that was the community pick for the best of Next Fest. So there we have it. What a fun Next Fest that was. Thanks very much to Slater. Thanks very much to Soccer. Thanks very much to everyone who took part. It was really, really fun. I should shout out, actually, that there was like an alternative calculation method where it was the averages rather than the yes votes. Esoteric Ebb took the top spot in that version, replaced, dropped out of the top 10 completely, interestingly. So I guess like it was like an average system where lower marks would pull a game down. 4 new games did hit that chart. The Mermaid Mask, which is like a Tangle Tower sequel. Forbidden Solitaire, which I have to go and check out, like a Inscription-like kind of. Ether and Iron, that noir point and click, hit that top 10 where the marks were averaged out. And Helix Descent and Ascent also hit that chart. A very intriguing looking monochrome Zelda-like, but perhaps with a bit more of a puzzle focus. So yeah, I should also shout out the people who played the most demos. The top few were Dr. St. Clair, a new patron and a very welcome new member of the community, who played an impressive 32 demos and who I enjoyed watching stream some demos on his Twitch channel several nights in a row. As I was playing demos, I was also watching Dr. St. Clair playing demos. Cursed Salaryman played a mighty 39 demos, and Lawrence played a majestic 44. So shout out to Dr. St. Clair, Cursed Salaryman, and Lawrence for really getting it done. And yeah, shout out to the whole community. That was a really, really fun week. So thanks everyone for taking part. If you like the sound of what you've been hearing and would like to take part yourself in the next Fest and all of the other fun events we have in the Patreon, then do hop over to patreon.com/gamingintheWild. Just $1 a month, join the Discord. You can take part in this kind of event. We also have a Game and Read Club, which has a cyberpunk theme this month. We'll be reading the book Murderbot and playing a Citizen Sleeper game and talking about them in that channel. We have various other events. We have like channels for Wordle, channels for Guess the Game, and Zoom Out. These are games that everyone plays and compares their marks each day. And we have the Contemporary Games channels for new things that are coming out. There is a conversation going currently about Cairn, about Resident Evil Requiem, about a bunch of other new games too. It's a really fun place to be. So come join us, patreon.com/gamingintheWild, if you would like to. And with that, I'm out for this one. Hope you enjoyed the episode. And until the next one, take care of yourselves and each other. And bye-bye for now.